All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, today we're going to be doing one of our random flights. No guests today. Yep. We're going to be talking about marketing to the affluent, and that's one of the topics. You've got some things that you're going to share. So,
yeah, if we get to it, if not, we'll save it for another flight somewhere. So, if we pass out early in the round of flights, we'll have backups. But that's right. I've got some stuff, 5 no-cost strategies to build authority and grow your business. I did this presentation for a summit earlier today. I won't do the full presentation, but I can hit the highlights today if we've got the time. So, and I want to talk about the platform that they used for their virtual summit. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But before we do that.
Yeah. We gotta take care of some business, which is our customary. Ooh, look at this. Beer Me.
The name of the beer is Beer Me.
All right. Like so that. I was out because we were talking earlier. So I was out in Texas and I had on my mind, I flew in from Dallas today. So I had on my mind while I was out there, I was going to stop by and pick up some locals, right? And
yeah.
Just completely forgot to do it until I was on my way to the airport and was like, shit, I forgot.
Probably would have exploded in your bag anyway. Carry on.
Could.
Or your check bag.
Possibility.
Couldn't have taken it in your carry on, but.
No, I would have checked it in, but.
Yeah.
Dang. Yeah, you never know because you know how those bags are coming down the conveyor. Sometimes they're upside down and.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could have been a
total disaster. Just the pressure. I'd be worried about the can exploding. I don't know. Yep. I guess it's pressurized, but. Yep. So anyway, yeah, I've got Beer Me. It's an American lager. I've never had this before. It's light. It's only 4.5% alcohol. A classic American lager done right by a craft brewery. Your new go-to beer for any occasions.
Mm.
Beer Me. It's got one of your favorite critters on it, too.
Yeah, he should be hanging on my wall. How many points is that?
He's got 1, 2, 3. It's only like 8.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff.
Art. It's not a real buck. It's just art. So, so lager. So this would have been good for our guest last week. Mm-hmm. He liked the piss colored beers. So this would be good for him.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a little hazy and light.
See, like lagers, you should just drink out of a can. You shouldn't pour them.
Right.
They just don't. They don't have that same look mm-hmm. that a nice dark beer has, or even an amber. It's just not the same. So what you got over there in
your town? Let's see. I've got and I forgot my glass. You know, I flew in to the airport.
Discombobulated today.
Just dropped my stuff off. Forgot to get a glass. You know, I come over to the office and I pick up some beer on the way over. They had this, though. This was actually a new one that I've never noticed. It is a... it's from Whole Hog Brewing Company. Whole Hog Brewing Company. A hazelnut brownie. So this is a...
it's a stout?
It's an imperial porter. Hazelnut porter. Okay. So all it right. says, I think this is kind of a leftover. They probably never... this is never a good sign where they've got some left over. But it's because it says on their website available through March the 31st. From November the 1st. So, but it says when the season turns cold, save room for the Whole Hog Hazelnut Brownie, a sweet, strong imperial porter layered with hazelnut and milk chocolate. Ooh, you'd love this, Sean.
Yeah, sounds good.
Feel the delicious warmth on your cheeks. Of course, with this cold spell, you know, we've gotten a little cold spell this week, so this might do the trick.
Yeah.
It is 9.2% ABV. And only 14 IBUs, so 9.2%. I could go for one of those right now. So,
you're drinking out of the bottle today, huh?
Yes.
All right. Well,
schlepping it cheers. With a bottle. Cheers. So this won't sound the same.
It sounds exactly the same to me.
All right. I'll let you go first because I may need to take a couple more sips here.
I haven't had a lager in a long time. I can't remember the last time I had a lager, so I was trying to kind of place it in that category. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's pretty good. I mean, I'm going to give this a, give it a 3.9, just under 4 out of 5.
Okay.
Give it a 3.9. It's a solid, I think, a good summertime out on the boat type beer, you know?
Okay.
Not bad at all.
Not what you expected.
Well, I mean, it's kind of what I expected. It's, you know, I wasn't expecting a great beer by any means. It's better than I expected, actually. Mm-hmm. But still, it's on a scale of all the beers I like, it's still, you know, it's not going to get a 4.
Right.
It's not going to be in the 4 to 5 category. That's reserved for dark beers only.
Dark beers only. Well, I can't tell how dark this is because, like I said, I didn't bring a glass, but this one's going to lose some points based on the fact, unfortunately, it's not cold because I didn't pull this out of a cooler. And they had this on the shelf. I didn't have time to keep it cold. So it's a little it's a little lukewarm, no glass. I'm doing them an injustice, Sean. Yeah. But I'm going to give them a I'm going to give this, outside of those things, I'm going to give it a 3.2. 3.2.
It's not bad. Not bad at all.
No. Got a good flavor. I think the not having a you know, the cold, not having it in a glass, that just, it really takes away some of it. Not their
fault. You can bring it back on. You can bring it back on next week.
That's right.
Next episode when it's cool, cold,
exactly,
chilled, whatever.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, let's jump into it. You had a big week. You were out traveling and you learned some. As always, there's marketing lessons everywhere you go.
All kinds of lessons. So, my mind is always like a, it's like a mental notebook. Always kind of just taking things away. I'm sure, you know, you're the same way. But experiences that happen in your life, you just take those and chalk those up to, some lessons in business and marketing and life. And this particular week I was traveling. It was kind of a business / personal. I took some personal time. I had some business meetings early part of the week, but then took a couple of days off. Flew into Houston, went over to Louisiana for a couple of days, did some fishing down there, some saltwater fishing for redfish, which was a lot of fun. And that's kind of one of the takeaways from this, is just because it's really my first time ever fishing for redfish. I've done a lot of freshwater fishing. I've been out deep sea fishing. But this was just like shallow on the coast, you know, saltwater fishing, but it's, you know, you're not going out far out. So it's a lot of fun because these things are, they put up a fight. I mean, it's like pulling in a humongous bass, like every time.
So how big are they on average? Like,
On average, you're looking around 10, you know, 8 to 10 pounds. I mean, that's just standard right there.
Yeah.
Between 8 and 10 pounds. Yeah. You can go bigger than that, but that's just your standard fish is like the standard one you catch is 8 to 10 pounds. So,
wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, they're fun and they fight like crazy when you're pulling them in. It's like the most fun. You'll get quite a workout. It's a nice little, you'll get some workout there in your shoulders. So I had some takeaways because the company, you don't just go out and fish on your own because you rely on experts. Obviously, it's similar to what we do. Like, we pay people that have knowledge and cater to the desires or whatever we want to do, whatever our interests are. And it always brings up, you remember the book, it's one of my favorite BS books by Dan Kennedy, was always the Marketing to the Affluent. And if you've never read that one, I highly recommend our listeners go out and grab a copy of the No BS Marketing to the Affluent by Dan Kennedy. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Really great good read. Book.
But this reminded me, the company that we used, it was funny. It's so ironic. The guy that runs the company, his name is Jason Catchings. Get it? Jason Catchings. That's his real name. It's not like a, that's not like a made up name. But it even got his hat here, Jason Catchings. And he does a lot of fishing and stuff like that. Takes people out fly fishing, takes people out saltwater fishing and things like that in groups. Man, just caters like his business. So he was telling me stories about how a lot of people were affected last year with COVID, right? A lot mm-hmm. of people not going out, a lot of people not taking fishing trips and things like that because of COVID. A lot of people in that business suffered. I mean, that's their livelihood. He was telling me he didn't miss a beat last year. And one of the reasons wow. is he caters to the extremely wealthy, right?
Like you.
I wish. But he caters to the people that obviously have money to spend and right. who want to do that.
Yeah, day out on the boat, you know, is not cheap.
No. And it's corporate clients, right? Yeah. He does a lot of work with corporate clients and people that no matter what. So one of the things that he said, you know, he does to set himself apart was, you know, do a lot of the, you know, details, you know, to take care of a lot of the details that people want, like always recommending, you know, people where to eat. He's got a Rolodex of like where the best places to eat are around town if you need to do that. I mean, any yeah. answer that you need about the area. Whereas, you know, a lot of people are in this business. They're old, you know, they may be older people and their business is probably hand to mouth during times like COVID, you know, mm-hmm. they're struggling. But they go about it in a much different way. They're not out there to basically be someone who caters to the wealthy and understands what they're looking for when they come to, you know, that area. Because when people come to that area, they're not just looking to fish. They're looking for the whole experience. And so and that's how he treated his business, is not just providing fishing, you know, taking you out to the best places to fish and giving you tips and everything, but it was a whole experience. And so he would recommend the beach, the lake house that we stayed at, you know, for the few days. He had everything prepared. All the meals were taken care of, brought in, fixed. You know, he would come in and actually make sure this guy had a background and he had a culinary background. So he would just come in and make sure every detail was covered down to the meals planned, everything was planned, whatever we needed. It was just a full service type thing and a full experience in his mind. He treated it completely different. And he told me, he said, that's how he's been so much more successful, is he treats it as this is more than just people wanting to come down and fish. And these people charter off a group of people, you know, for a couple of or a few hours out in the sea and bring them back. And some of these guys just do it over and over again. But he doesn't look at it that way. He looks at it as a complete experience and a relationship. He builds relationships with his clients and he treats it like a full experience business, whereas so many other people just treat it as, I'm helping you with this, or I'm taking you out on a boat for this. So,
right. Well, it just goes to show too, because he helped organize the cabin and the food and everything. All that kind of stuff. So he can charge more.
Right.
He gets a piece of those probably with referrals.
Right.
And even if he doesn't, he's going to get the referrals of just the overall experience, like you said, as opposed to just that couple hours out on the boat fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're right. That's what people want when they're going on a trip like that. You know, if you go with some buddies or whatever, or corporate, like yep. you don't want just the 3 or 4 or 5 hours on the boat. You want time to get to know each other, time yep. to hang out with each other,
right.
away from the office, away from regular business. So it is a whole experience,
right?
You know, people, and if you can help them, if you can take care of the part before the fishing, after the fishing, that yeah. you expand your ability to charge more for the entire experience.
Yep.
So your lifetime customer value goes up.
And that's everything. The thing. People come back to him time and time again. So this was my brother's been using him, and that's who it's, you know, this is my first time. My older brother has been, and this is the trip we went together, along with some other guys, some partners of his in his business. And he's been doing business with this guy for years. And that's the thing. This guy, he builds lifetime clients that people mm-hmm. like, once they use him, they come back again and again and again, because they don't forget the experience they've had. So he's like, you know, that's the secret. I've got, you know, 20 or 30 corporate clients that just come back again and again to me. I'm the go-to guy.
So I mean, think about that. You got 30 corporate clients, you know, 52 weeks in a year.
Right.
You only need one of those a week to
right.
have a pretty good, you Absolutely. Know, pretty good income. Because they pay more too.
They do. And the, you know, he understands that. That's, you know, that concierge type. If you provide a if you look at it from a concierge experience when you're dealing with wealthy people, I think that's the key. They will come back to you time and time again. To kind of follow up with that experience that I had, I wanted to throw this out. I wanted to go through it's five essential tips for marketing or selling to the affluent people. So, and this falls in line with exactly, I went through this before I decided to, you know, bring this up on the show, but this falls in line with these guys. You know, every detail of this was covered. And the first one is, so tip number one, it says, talk about, like, form relationships. That's at the very top. It says, you probably heard the age old adage about the importance of schmoozing a buyer, and nothing could be truer when talking about marketing to the affluent. As such, connecting with your clients about what drives them, what their passions are, interest, learning about, makes them feel special. So one of the things that he did when we were out on the boat, he would ask a lot of questions. Tell me about your business. What do you guys, you know, what do you do? And he mm-hmm. would just follow up questions, you know, just everything was centered on the customer, centered on the clients. Very important lesson. Don't talk about yourself. talk about your customers and put them as the priority.
Yep.
Which leads into number two, says always prioritize the client. So true. As a business person, you're probably up to your neck in work. That being said, you should never imply to a client, affluent or otherwise, that you don't have time to go out of your way to make sure that they're getting the best service possible from your business. In addition to always prioritizing an affluent client's needs, make sure to inform them that you're never too busy to help. All right. There's different levels. We have to understand different levels. And I see this in my business. I don't treat my best customers, my biggest corporate clients, the same way that I treat my smaller to midsize, right? They get premium service. Yeah. And that's the way you should do it. There's nothing wrong with that. There is a level of discrimination that you can set in your business, and that's completely fair.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if you're getting paid to deliver a product, you know, then it's, you know, it's kind of a set price. You try to be fair. But if you're getting paid to develop relationships and offer insights and all that kind of stuff, then obviously the more you get paid, the more time you should have available for those people, right?
Absolutely.
And so yeah, I mean, and just the level of, you know, touch and everything else that you're going to do for those people.
Yep.
And there's no rule that says, you know, even two clients that paid the same thing, like there's no rule that says you have to treat those two the same way.
Mm. No, because one could be a long-term value. You know, that client comes to you or maybe spends more money over the lifetime value. You know, they provide that lifetime value.
Or you may just like them better.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, exactly. It's your business, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Third thing, narrow your focus. There are two ways to approach selling and marketing. Attempting to sell a small amount of products to a large group of people, or attempting to sell a large amount of products to a small group of people. And we've talked about this, like, you know, there's a debate on niche marketing and niches, you know, all the cliches about niche marketing and everything over the years. And I think there's been some back and forth on whether should niche. I'm of the opinion that you should broaden, like you should niche, start out in something, broaden yourself, but still stay loyal to a niche group. You know, if you have to do that, but it's certainly good to make yourself known, well known in one particular industry. You know, I do a lot of, most of the work that I do is in the manufacturing sector in specific niche industries within manufacturing, but I do get calls from other people or referrals from other people that have been referred to me by companies that are outside of that. Now, am I going to turn that away? Well, for the right, you know, if it makes sense, obviously, and things are in a line, I'm not going to turn them away by saying, no, I don't work in that niche industry. But I think it's good to start somewhere. And I think this guy, you know, for example, this guy did fishing, but he also does other types of sporting events too. He does he does saltwater fishing and fly fishing. Those are his specialties. But in the off season, I think he does hunting groups and things like that as well. Make yourself known in at least a niche, and then you can come out of that.
Yeah, I agree. And it, you know, it's, and I struggle with this myself, and you know, some of the things I've done. But you know, niching, if the only reason for niching is it just helps you, it really helps you with your marketing, knowing who you're going after. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you'll get spillover no matter what.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, even when I was doing strictly financial copy, mm-hmm. I would occasionally get, you know, from totally different outside of financial copy. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and if, like you said, it's a good fit and looks like a fun project, you mm-hmm. take it. If not, you pass it on, or have a, you know, somebody in your network that you could pass it on to, either absolutely. Just as a favor, or, you know, for a percentage or something.
Right.
But yeah, it definitely is easier to, you know, to market yourself or market what you do if you're very clear, which you kind of need a niche for that.
Right.
I could also make an argument for mass, but it's definitely more expensive to go broad, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
It takes a little longer, I think. I think you can have quicker success yep. in niches.
I've jumped in niches and real quickly built a following and turned it into a profitable business right away that would take me a lot longer. But, you know, I've made the mistake of jumping into some niches before that I just really had no passion for. And yeah. it really showed up, you know, and to the point where I didn't even want to, when I was called to do things or called to, in one particular arena, and you know, Sean, the veterinarian niche
yeah.
that I got out of after a couple of years, even did a book in it,
yeah.
Did some speaking engagements for him, but I just felt like really out of place, because it was like, that was one of those niches I jumped into it because I saw the marketing potential and the potential for income. But ultimately I just kind of, it's one of those niches. If you don't have any experience whatsoever, you feel like kind of a fraud. So yeah. I had to get out of that, even though I knew marketing, and I hired some people that had experience in a veterinarian niche to help me along with tailoring content and, you know, putting together, you know, books and things like that and content for that industry. I would hire people to tailor my message to them. At the end of the day, I was like, you know what? This is just not for me, because I just don't know enough. I don't have enough experience in this.
Yeah, if you just don't enjoy it, you know, it's not
exactly. That was a big thing. You. Yeah, I was like, every time I went, I remember speaking in front of a group of veterinarians down in Auburn, Alabama, and just thinking, I have very little knowledge about what you guys do outside of, I know you guys treat, you know, animals and stuff like that, but I have no background in your business, but I can tell you all about this. But it just, it didn't feel like it was a good fit for me.
Yeah. But it just goes to prove what you said. Like, you can go in and be mm-hmm. very successful very quickly if you really go after a tight niche.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. And people could care less if you're tailoring to them and you have a specialty or a skill set, they'll do business with you and they'll pay a lot more. That's the key, because that information is tailored to you and you'll rise above the crowd. So, fourth, getting character. If you're not playing the part of an affluent businessman yourself, you may have trouble connecting with elite clients and forming relationships.
That's a great point.
A very good point. So to help you get into character, you need to fully immerse yourself in your clients and the life that your clients live. So, for example, a real estate agent may live in the same neighborhood or condominium complex that he's marketing to, or a corporate attorney may dine at some of the frequent places that his clients in the corporate world do. So understand, you know, you don't have to go out if you don't have the budget and spend the money that, you know, to, you know, make yourself appear, but you do, you know, you do need to immerse yourself into the things that they enjoy and the things that they read about and study about. You know, maybe, you know, investing, obviously that's something that you could study and have a decent conversation with someone who's affluent. Boating, you know, obviously a lot of affluent people are into boating, you know, that type of, you know, that type of thing, any kind of extracurricular activities that they enjoy doing, whether it's cigars, wine, you name it. You know, it's just something that you should educate or probably update yourself on to kind of get a firm understanding, at least enough that you can have a conversation.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, your business needs to be well run and successful.
Yeah.
Even if you're not into those things, because those types of people can spot.
Yeah.
If you're struggling in your business,
absolutely.
I mean, they can just smell it, you know, it's like they just can. So even if you're not into any of the stuff they're into, but you really do a good job of making your business a first class business, they will respect that and you'll have a peer to peer relationship. You know, I even saw this, you know, writing copy that if I, you know, was really good at my craft and things like that, I could talk with the publishers or the people that hired me on a peer to peer basis instead of a, you know, person hiring in a contractor basis. Right. So, and that's what I've always strived to do in most things I'm in, is just try to be more peer to peer like, and less employee or contractor like.
Yep.
I think you do the same thing in your sales as well.
Yeah. I rarely talk about the company that I represent, because in my mind, I work for my clients. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't go around as someone who is a champion for the company products, because at the end of the day, I understand that most of the people out there buy through relationships. So it's all about how I present myself, how I engage them, how I exactly what I said earlier, putting their interest first and making sure that I'm serving their needs and their interest first and foremost. They can care less who the name is that you represent behind. They're like, hey, just bring in the guy that can help me, right? At the end of the day, the guy.
And then they're going to take your recommendation if it's ABC or Acme or XYZ. Like they don't really care, because they're going to take your recommendation.
Exactly.
All right. So what's number five?
Last one. And then we will move on. Maximizing opportunities after closure. And this is important, because this is a good lesson from this guy. Wooing your affluent clients may be important before a deal has been made and your business gains profits, but it shouldn't end there. Rather, acknowledge that a business relationship is an ongoing process that requires constant work even after the deal has been closed. So stay in touch with your clients, doing as many favors for them as possible. You'll go and they'll come back to you time and time again. And that's exactly this guy. Like I said, he would follow up. He's got a long-term relationship with all of his, all of his customers. And I said earlier about just some of the local places. This guy knew places all over the South. Like if you were going to somewhere, say, for instance, you were going to Daytona Beach, he knew, like, I don't care where you would say, he would say, you need to go here in Daytona or in Destin and check this place out while you're there, you know. And he always had recommendations. So he obviously researched, you know, did a lot of research, or either as well traveled and knew enough about different places that if you mentioned some place to go, he would have like recommendations on places to eat, where to stay. I mean, you name it. So, it was just that concierge approach where he really was looking after, looking after his clients.
What's one of the hardest things when you're with a group? Like, what's one of the hardest things to decide? It's where to go. Where to go to dinner,
right? And if somebody like just says we should go,
somebody
you should
says,
go here.
Man, y'all got to go here. Boom. Everybody's like, cool. We don't have to make that decision.
That's right. Easy.
Thank God. Yeah.
I mean, just make sure that the place that you mention is good, right?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, people love that. I mean, it's I know we went on a whale watching tour in Hawaii, the captain of the boat, he was like, where are y'all heading next? Or what do you want to do? And it's like, I think we're going to go over to Hilo for the day tomorrow. And he's like, oh, same thing. He's like, oh man, you got to stop at this place. It's a hole in the wall.
Right.
He's like, when you walk in, you may not want to stay, but trust me, best burgers in Hilo.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Go there. And sure enough, man, it was the best burgers that I've had in a long time. So yeah, that kind of stuff. And it leaves an impression, right?
It does. You appreciate that, because you're like you said,
it's like a two for one experience, right? You get the experience of what you were there for.
Right.
and you get this bonus experience that only this person, mm-hmm. you know, could have told you about.
Right.
So it's like getting two for the price of one.
Right. Absolutely. And it saves you a ton of time because I'm going to tell you, even if you go to some place and you mm-hmm. get to that place, I mean, what's the first thing you do? You get on your phone and you're like, best places to eat, you know, whatever. and then you find a list on, you know, the ranking. You have like 50,000 Google listings on rankings, you know, and you got to sort through all that. So the internet's not, I mean, the web, is useful as it has been to us, is no longer a useful tool in a lot of ways because it's so it's much
overwhelming.
It's overwhelming information. So
yes, too much choice. I think that's going to be a big service moving forward is the, what do you call that? I guess it's kind of like what you've been saying, concierge, but someone who mm-hmm. can take all that information and just kind of condense it down and kind of prescribe it to you. Mm-hmm. There's a word for that, but I can't think of what it is.
Well, listen, I appreciate, you know, when you go to hotels, mm-hmm. You know, one of the first things, if I can remember sometimes the thing, you know, if I'm going to someplace new, I'll say, what do you recommend, you know, in terms of restaurants? I don't know this place, you know, do you have any recommendations? And like some of the best places I've ever stayed will like, oh yeah, they'll pull out basically it's like a laminated copy or something like that. That's got everything listed out, broken down just for you. I mean, something simple like that it doesn't take a whole lot of extra effort, but it definitely, you know, makes people remember you. The fact that, you know, so few people or so few places do that. So few hotel chains do that, you know.
Well, and again, it goes back to kind of the marketing to the affluent. Because I know if you go to a pretty nice restaurant, right, mm-hmm. that's got a good wait staff,
yep.
servers, whatever they're called these days. Yep. Like, I don't Careful know what they're sure. called these days. I know. We're going to get canceled, man. like, if the difference between, like, an Applebee's or, you know, fast casual type place mm-hmm. and a higher end place. If you say, hey, say Jonathan, you're my server. I'm like, what's the best thing on the menu? Mm-hmm. Like if you're at a lower end place, they're like, well, the so-and-so is good, but so is this. And so is this. And pretty soon they've quoted the whole menu too.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, you're right back where you were. But if you go to a higher end place, they'll tell you like really quick. They're like, we're known for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the best thing on the menu, and they'll wait for your response. And they'll be like, and you'll be like, I don't eat red meat. They're like, oh, okay. Well then, then you'll definitely want this instead. But those are my top two recommendations. Mm-hmm. Everything's good, but those two things are the best.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. And you can do the same thing in your business. When you're talking to people, you know, when they ask for your opinion, give them your strongest recommendation. Don't say everything's good. You know, whatever, like say, this is what I do best. This is what I'm best at.
Right.
You know, I could either help you with that, these other things, or I could help you find somebody. Mm-hmm. But if you really want my best work, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I do best.
Yep.
And I think, and that builds so much trust, especially with higher end clients.
Man, isn't that true? I mean, you want people with assertive opinions, you know?
Yeah, conviction.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Like, it reminds me, what you were just saying reminds me of an experience, it was probably a couple months ago, but one of my favorite restaurants when I go over to Nashville is Jay Alexander's. It's great food, but went there one time or a couple of months back, and what do you call it, server? Sean, what did I got to be careful too. The server.
Yeah. Server, wait staff, I don't know.
She goes, what are you?
Server sounds pretty demeaning. I think
like it does. It really
waiter
does.
And waitress sounds a lot better than server, but I don't know.
She goes, what are you in the mood for? That was her first question. You know, what are you in the mood? Because you don't want to make a recommendation. If you're a steak eater, you don't want to recommend seafood, right? So she goes, what are you in the mood? The first thing she said was, what are you in the mood for? And I said, seafood. And she goes, you got to have the crab cake. You're like, our crab cakes are the best. They're amazing.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't want crab cakes. And she goes, no. She goes, do you normally eat crab cakes? And you're just not. And I said, yeah, I've eaten crab cakes, but I'm just not in the mood. She's like, No. She goes, trust me, you've never had crab cakes like this. And if you're a seafood eater, you'll love them. So I was like, but the way she said it, you know, just the conviction,
man, that's awesome.
And the passion that she said it, I was like, well, because I was like leaning towards like trout or something like that. And then I was like, forget it. Because of that, because of your conviction, your passion, I'm done.
And how much respect did you have for that person? Oh,
tons.
Probably got a bigger tip for it too.
She did. And it was a great choice. She was absolutely right. They were unlike anything I've ever eaten. Yeah.
And if she does that, there's probably other things throughout the meal.
Absolutely.
You know, that this, she takes that kind of care and concern with her customers that she's going to do it. We had the similar thing and then we'll wrap on this and we'll do the other stuff, some other show. But, but on that same vein, we were at one of those Brazilian steakhouses here in town with some friends, and it was time for dessert, which, you know, you don't have much room for dessert at a Brazilian steakhouse. But anyway, they had this one thing called the flaming cheesecake. And it's like a whole show. Like it's, you know, it's cheesecake. They put some alcohol, I don't know, brandy or something in a glass and they swirl it and they light it on fire and they pour it over the cheesecake and the cheesecake's burning and they put these, and they put sugar on it and it flames up. It's like a science experiment. And I knew that I'd been there before, so I knew I wanted that. And I was kind of saving room. And then one of the guys that was with us, we went like three couples went out. He was like, I'll just have the strawberry cheesecake, you know, because it was like $7 or $15. So I don't know if he's looking at the price. And, and the waiter, same thing. He's like, wait, do you like cheesecake? And he's like, yeah. He's like, well, you got to have the flaming cheesecake. It's not only is it cooler, just it tastes better. It's everything about it is better.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, eh, I don't know. And he's like, trust me, if you don't like it, I'll take it back and bring you the strawberry cheesecake.
Wow. Yeah. That's bold.
Yeah.
Risk reversal right there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and that's how confident he was in his best kind of signature, you know, dessert. And sure enough, man, the guy's like, oh my God, this is the best choice ever.
Yeah.
You know? And the fact is, like, even doing that with that kind of confidence from a neurological and standpoint, like you're actually priming the people to like it better.
Absolutely.
Because you're pre-framing them to say this is best. So part of them is going to think it's better than it actually is because you've told them it's better. Right. That, you know, so
yeah, there's some of that certainly goes into that because you're setting yourself up, which I mean, you expect.
You could, I guess it could backfire, but usually it doesn't, I don't think. I mean, if it's high quality.
Right.
You know, it's going to be good. So, well, I know you got to run. You've been out of town all week. You're going to get back to the family. So we can cover the five no cost strategies on another episode. Maybe that'll keep people coming back.
I'm sure it will. But just some key takeaway lessons. Like, I don't care what business you're in. Mm-hmm. You could be, whether you're a copywriter, you're a consultant, you're a
lawn care guy.
Lawn care guy. I mean, I look for ways to set yourself apart and market to the affluent, the wealthy, or, you know, if you're in B2B, you know, look for ways to improve the level of business that you market to, right? Step it up a little because, I mean, just like in affluent marketing, you can do that. You can apply that in B2B and market to kind of a higher niche or a higher group. a higher group of company, right? So so be thinking a while about those ways to set yourself apart, especially if you're B2C, you know, and how to make, you know, create that experience, you know, in your business, right? In your business, you could do it to anything.
Yeah, for sure. And the hardest thing is to get a customer. That's like the hardest thing in business is to get a new customer. Absolutely. So once you have them, it just makes a lot of sense to woo them and go the extra mile and add services and add things that you can do for them because they're going to be your best customers and they'll refer more people like them.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to spend as much on front end marketing, which is the most expensive part of marketing.
Yeah, it sure is.
So
yeah, it's always easier to sell to an existing customer than to
find a new one.
To find a brand new one. All right. Well, that's a wrap. And Sean, it's been fun. We'll get back to our regular programming next week. We'll have probably a guest on and then have our second show. We'll cover some of the stuff you were going to talk about today on that episode. And
that works.
Yeah. And to all of our listeners, thanks for listening. Hope you have a great weekend and we'll see you next time.
See ya.